Welcome to Seek Reality with Roberta Grimes. Joyous conversations about what the afterlife evidence and modern science combine to tell us is true about our one reality. You have nothing to fear. You are eternal and you are perfectly loved. Knowing the truth changes everything. Now, here's Roberta.
Dear friends, each of us is on a spiritual journey. We can't avoid it. That's why we're here. Even if we are raving atheists, if we rob banks, are cruel to others, whatever we do, each human life is a personal journey toward eventual reunion with our source. Welcome to Seek Reality. I'm Roberta Grimes. Our guest today is Rhonda Schwartz. Her lovely and touching book, Love Eternal, has just been reissued with the improvements and updates. It is the story of her own spiritual journey that includes being the partner in work and in life of the greatest afterlife scientist in history and who is my dear friend, Dr. Gary Schwartz of the University of Arizona at Tucson. Rhonda is a gifted spiritual medium in her own right, whether she tells you that or not, and her story is inspiring. Welcome, Rhonda. I'm so glad you're here.
Hi, Roberta. Thank you so much for inviting me to be here with you today.
I discovered as I started to read the new edition of Love Eternal that I had read it years ago, and even revisiting all of the things that she says in it and finding new things was really a wonderful journey for me. This is a great love story. Anyone who likes to read a love story really ought to read this book because you can see these two people coming at really midlife to find one another after their journeys, and knowing them personally and watching them interact is a joy. Just want to say that, Rhonda. It's a beautiful, beautiful love story.
Well, it's a love story on a lot of levels.
Yes. Let's start with Mom. What inspired you to begin to write about your experiences and your mother? How did that get started?
Well, Love Eternal is a book I wrote in which I share accounts taken directly from a journal that I began keeping when I started having unexpected experiences and communications, which I attributed to my mother trying to reach me after she passed, and subsequently an even more unexpected journey with her and others, which grew out of that initial connection with her, a journey with spirit that I am still on and marvel at every single day.
Yeah.
And the message really is that it's all about love. Love is eternal. After someone passes, they can still show you their love for you. We can still receive and feel that love. We can still share our love with them, and they can still feel that love in return. And is it the same as having them be here the way it was before? No. But you can have very, very, very special experiences. And the reason I was compelled to write the book in part was out of love and gratitude for my mother, and certainly to honor her for her efforts and the lengths that she went to show me that she was still here after she passed. And the fact that she would have wanted others to know about that reality of survival of consciousness, not just me. And so I wanted to share my story with others.
Yeah, it's really quite beautiful to see the relationship between the two of you. When did this start? When did your mother graduate?
In 2001.
So you really, until that time, did you realize you had some psychic abilities back then?
I didn't. I have a very spiritual background. I had experienced a lot of spiritual healing. That was more my area of interest. So I knew there were powers and forces and intelligences governing things, and that you could appeal to them and align yourself with them, and you could have results in the physical world of health and resolution of problems. But I didn't know that you could communicate with those who had passed.
You didn't even know that?
And then I wasn't expecting it at all. And that was another one of the reasons why I wanted to write this book. I didn't want other people to be in the dark the way that I had been. I hadn't been taught this in my spiritual or religious tradition. I certainly hadn't been taught it in any of the college courses I had taken at the university. I wish I had been.
Right.
Fortunately for students who take my husband's courses at the University of Arizona, they do get that education and that heads up. And I was also inspired to write it because when I went looking for answers to the things that I was seeing and witnessing, I found some books written by other people that had been having similar experiences and after-death communications, and those books were invaluable to me at the time when I was trying to come to grips with what was happening and trying to understand it. And those people, most of them weren't professional authors. They just had profound experiences that they felt were important to share. And I felt indebted to them and now wanted to share my experiences and what I was coming to learn about survival of consciousness and communication with those who'd passed on.
And I think it's important to just mention that your book is beautifully written. I mean, I'm kind of a stickler for good writing. I've been writing all my life, and one of the most enjoyable things about your book is you really can get to know and almost feel that you're Rhonda, because you write intimately, you write beautifully. So that's a great recommendation from me, because I usually don't feel that way about the things that I read that people have written that I then interview.
You asked how it all began for me. It was totally unexpected and out of the blue. And it's kind of funny that it was, because prior to my mom's passing, I had been watching with great interest John Edwards' TV show Crossing Over for about 3 years. And for those listeners who don't know who he was one of the first mediums featured on television. So I knew from watching his show that as a medium, some people were able to connect with and talk with the dead. Of course, they're not dead. However, the fact that he was able to do that, I always looked at as being because he had a special gift or ability, and that for some reason never translated in my mind to my thinking that this ever happened with regular people. I don't know why. It just
wouldn't
didn't.
Happen
it just
to
seemed,
me.
Well, it seems so inconceivable. I couldn't even imagine it.
Yes.
And I hadn't had those type of experiences, so I really had no idea.
Let's just tell people parenthetically that many people have various kinds of mediumistic gifts. It might be to be a spiritual medium. It might be to be clairvoyant or clairaudient. It might be to be an intuitive in some fashion. In my case, I didn't realize I was a very good channel for the dead to write until I was in my latter 60s.
Wouldn't it have been nice to have known that earlier so you might have been able to, you know,
it still flabbergasts me. I'm doing another book now. The first one I've done after liberating Jesus, which was really channeled, but this one I can feel is being channeled too. I've been waiting for the table of contents. I just got it, and now I'm realizing that I have the introduction. Well, it's humbling to realize that you don't write anything, but it's also kind of freeing in a way. So you began to be spiritual then into...
Well, I'd been raised in a spiritual household. It just, that wasn't part of our training. So I do credit John Edwards with opening the door of my mind enough that when these experiences started happening, I was prepared enough to entertain the possibility that it was communication from my mom.
One more thing about John Edwards. I didn't believe in spiritual or psychic mediums at all until I read a book by Dr. Gary Schwartz called The Afterlife Experiments. And that one book, which I recommend all the time, convinced me. He double and triple blind tested many American mediums, and one of the ones that he tested and found was a very good psychic medium was John Edwards. So there you had a little synchronicity right there, dear.
Right. He tested him and others here at the University of Arizona years before I met him. And Gary's book, The Afterlife Experiments, was one of the first books that I found when I went looking for answers to what I was experiencing. And I'd actually heard him on radio before. I'd heard him on the Laura Lee Show. I'd heard him probably on Coast to Coast. So I was familiar with him. I think I'd even seen the HBO special that was done on his testing of mediums. But it still didn't sink in that normal people, regular people, could have those experiences.
Then came the day when you decided to go to a conference, right? And was he one of the attractions to go to that conference?
Absolutely.
Oh, good.
maybe I should share a little bit about how my mom connected with me initially. Well, in 2001, I was living in Seattle, and I had gone back to Illinois to visit my mother for the Thanksgiving holiday, and she passed while I was there. And she'd been kind of preparing me, letting me know in subtle ways that she might not be with me much longer, but I didn't expect her to pass while I was there. But on Thanksgiving evening, she did pass. And I was one of those lucky people who, my mom was my best friend. She was beautiful. She was a very loving person, a very spiritual person. And I remember in the moments and hours after she passed, this horrible feeling of how in the world it could possibly be that we weren't going to be able to be together anymore for the rest of my life. It was absolutely inconceivable to me, not to mention seemingly being completely unfair, unloving, unnatural, and just plain wrong.
Yeah, that's awful.
And,
okay, so you lost her. It was very traumatic. Well, it is. Frankly, it's traumatic for almost everyone when they have a parent die, especially when they're close to.
Any loved one. It's the greatest trauma in life, I think. And there were a couple signs that things were going on that I started to think perhaps were her with lights and things like that. But the thing that really captured my attention, I was single at the time, I had no children, my father had passed 3 years earlier, and being an only child, there was a lot of things that I had to do before I went back to Seattle. And one of the things I knew I had to take care of right away was to call my father's previous employer. When he passed 3 years earlier, my mother had showed me some paperwork that she had signed that showed
an elective. Oh, I love
the
story. Yes, of course you have to tell the story. Sorry, I'm remembering it.
Just
go ahead, dear.
It will show people why I knew it was her and why I was launched on this journey.
Yes.
So she showed me the paperwork that she had signed at the time he passed, and it showed an elective that she'd made for his retirement annuity. And it stated that if she'd passed before a 10-year period, that it would come to me for the remainder of that 10 years, and then it would stop. I looked everywhere in the house for those papers, every drawer, every file in her house to find them, and I couldn't find them, but I was sure the employer would have a record of it, so I didn't think too much about it. But when I called them, they said they knew nothing about it, and they had nothing in their files indicating that that was what was supposed to happen. Now, that was a shock, and my normal nature would have been to doggedly go through every file and every drawer in the house again until I found those papers. But I had limited time. I was exhausted. There was so much to do. And I remember feeling for the first time in my life that I had a question regarding something concerning my mom, and I couldn't just say, "Hey, Mom," and ask her the question. It was the strangest feeling, and I didn't like it. That's not what our relationship was about. We were a team. And so what I did was something that was normal for me. I remember I stood in the middle of her living room, and I said, "God, you know where those papers are, so if there's some way that you could show me where they are, I would really be grateful." And then I did something that was not so normal for me. I stood there and I said, "Mom?"
Yes.
I said, "I know you know where those papers are as
right.
well, and you know why I really need to find them right now. So if you could somehow tell me where they are, I would really appreciate it." And much to my surprise, no sooner had I spoken those words than I heard in my head, "Go into my study," and in the closet, on the floor, behind Dad's folded flag, "you'll find those papers."
Wow, yes.
It wasn't a flash or an impression that I had to interpret.
It was a voice.
It was in complete sentences in my head in the first person, just like she was standing right next to me talking.
Did it sound like
and
her, or was it just a voice?
It did not have a vocal quality to it that sounded identifiably as her voice, no.
Not surprising. Yep,
yeah.
Go ahead. That's wonderful. Tell a story. I want to get to the punchline.
And I didn't have to think about it very long because it was right in the next room. It was so simple. All I had to do was go and look. So I walked into her study, which used to be my bedroom as a child. She still lived in the same house I grew up in. And I could see the closet door was slightly opened. And I remember reaching for the doorknob, and it was almost like slow motion. And when I opened the door, I could see my dad's folded flag on the floor, leaning up against the wall, just like she had said, and curling up from behind it were some loose sheets of paper. And I remember thinking to myself, if that's what those papers are, from this moment forward, everything is different.
Right.
Everything is changed.
That's
and that's
right.
exactly what they were.
Wow.
Now, imagine what it was like all of a sudden to have your life ripped and changed in such a painful way. You're grieving, you're trying to grapple with the immense loss and separation, and then, just as abruptly, like turning on a dime, being thrust on a new path of trying to find answers to what just happened and seems totally inexplicable. That was a defining moment for me, and it literally has defined the course of my life up to this day.
I think that's an amazing story. There are others that I've heard about exactly the same sort of thing. We have to find the will. There's this traumatic instant problem we have, which we somehow have to solve. And people do hear from the recently departed loved one and get it solved. But I just love that story because by the time you get to it, you are inside Rhonda's head. So you are the one who is hearing the voice and then going to the closet. And and that's exciting. I'm so happy for you that it immediately, because what a comfort that is. Oh, you're still here after all, Mom. I'm so glad
to
hear that.
Yeah.
Well, what I want to do now is just briefly talk about how you and Gary met, because especially who it was that engineered the meeting. I think people would love to hear that. I mean, here's someone now, Rhonda, who has lost her parents. She doesn't have any siblings. She's going forward in the world, trying as best she can to, you know, live a good life and be spiritual and do all of those things. And you probably were seeking even then, right? You were a seeker by that time?
Oh, absolutely. I think I was born a seeker. And I, like I said, I grew up in a spiritual household. So I was always reading and studying and you know, practicing my spirituality and trying to learn about the greater reality. So that was part of my makeup, absolutely.
So just to let people know, your husband is just a wonderful, in person, a wonderful guy and a wonderful friend. He's, of course, you would think so, but I'm just his friend. He is as effervescent and as curious as a child.
Yes.
He is full of ideas. To be with him and to watch his mind work and follow each thought he has, I mean, it's every time I interview him, and he's been on Seek Reality several times, I never really know where we're going. I mean, we'll do it, I'll think we're going to talk about one thing, and something will catch his attention, and we'll go off in that direction, and that makes it really fun for me to know him. But he is, in person, he seems like a venerable scientist if you read his books, because his books are serious, venerable science. But in person, he is just the most delightful guy. Just have to say that. So here he is. He's kind of alone, too, in the world. There you are.
Yeah, he was. I didn't know that at the time I met him, but he was. He was divorced. I didn't know that. I thought he was married because his book, The Afterlife Experiments, which I read, he wrote with his then-wife, Linda Russick. And so I assumed they were still married and still working together. And so it was a surprise when we met and I learned that he was no longer married. So, like I said, I had read his book, The Afterlife Experiments. It was a lifeline to me, along with a handful of other books that I found as accounts of after-death communication. And I was familiar with his pedigree as far as, you know, being a Harvard-trained professor and working at the University of Arizona. There aren't too many people doing scientific research in this area, and I think he's the only one at a major university. So
I think he was too. I mean, this is a small, closed community still of people who are afterlife researchers, and
absolutely.
He has told me, if you know, tenure is a great thing, because otherwise he wouldn't have been able to be so free in the wonderful work he does.
And that's, it's still a challenge at times. So I really, you know, admire him for doing what he's doing.
We all admire him.
At the time Gary and I met, Gary was living in Tucson. I was living in Seattle. I had been communicating with my mom for about 4.5 years at that point, and so I had developed a level of confidence and a whole list of evidential experiences with her. And I was beginning to wonder what we should do at this point. We had this now really strong communication where I could hear what she was saying, and I was wondering what we're supposed to do with this. This must have value in some area. I didn't know if we could go into crime solving. I didn't know. But one night I was listening to Diane Archangel on a radio show, and she mentioned, she wrote a book on after-death communications as well. She's a grief therapist. And she mentioned a conference that was going to be held at Duke University, sponsored by the Ryan Institute. And there were going to be about 11 presenters speaking on various aspects of after-death communication, including one Dr. Gary Schwartz.
Yay!
And I thought, maybe what my mom and I are doing, you know, it would be valuable to somebody, you know, researching in the field. And so I thought, I'm going to go to this conference. And I took the week off before the conference, wrote up my journal notes into a readable packet, and I actually made a copy for every one of the presenters there, because I didn't know who was going to resonate with it or who it
might be
valuing.
Yeah, that was very smart, actually, and that's something I would recommend that people do. If you're having extraordinary things happen in your life that you think might be useful to an afterlife researcher, reach out. I mean, I know most of these people personally, and they are very approachable and personable and eager to hear from others. I mean, I'm starting to hear from people now who are amazed that I'll return their emails. They shouldn't be. I mean, that's the whole reason all of us are here. But so let's fast forward a bit to, you actually met him. He said that when he met you, it was like, okay, fine. But then you were sitting in the front row, as I guess, of the session he was going to lead, mm-hmm. and there was a shaft of light down to your head.
He doesn't normally share that, because he's a scientist and he's observing other people's experiences rather than having yes. any himself. But that's true. That was the first morning of the conference, and I arrived and I was kind of scoping him out. I was hoping to find any opportunity to, you know, introduce myself and share my experiences with him. And I first saw him. He was at the top of the theater. It's this very steep, dramatic incline in this. Theater at Duke University, and he was standing talking to a small group of people, and so I just stood on the other side of the aisle thinking, you know, maybe they would conclude their conversation and I would have an opportunity to introduce myself, and that didn't really happen. At one point, he glanced over at me, and it was one of those looks like, do I know you, kind of a look. You know, it was a long, you know, searching look, and then he went back to talking, and I thought, oh, well, I'll just, you know, let them, you know, have their time, and I'll get with him another time. So I went down and sat in the first row. Well, his experience, and of course I didn't know this till much, much later, when he turned around, he saw what looked like a shaft of light coming down onto my head, and it was like there were sparkles going in both directions, and it was kind of gold and lavender, and he'd never seen anything like that before, and yeah. he was like, I think I need to go talk with this woman.
Yes,
a little bit of hint from the universe,
yes.
maybe, I don't know.
Yes. I'd like to just pause and say something that resonated with me, because almost 50 years ago, I walked into a room which was a mixer, and there was a young man sitting there among all the others. He looked very nervous, and he was surrounded by light. It was a dark room, and I saw the same kind of light sign when I met my husband. We've been married; it'll be 44 years. In August.
Isn't that beautiful?
So here's a hint, folks. If you're looking for a spouse and you see someone with a light around them, it might be good to try to get to know them and just say hello. I think
right.
that's a beautiful story. We're going to pause just for a moment. And when we come back, in order to have plenty of time to talk about the experiments too, I'd like to talk about how this was engineered, because obviously the story of the light is a sign that this was not accidental, and it turns out it was being engineered by some people who loved them both. But meanwhile, I just want to pause and say briefly that this is Seek Reality with Roberta Grimes. My nonfiction books are The Fun of Dying, The Fun of Staying in Touch, My Thomas, and Liberating Jesus. You can learn more about all my books and find my blog at robertagrimes.com, and I do answer emails. our guest today is a beautiful, beautiful person. I've known Rhonda now for a while, and A, I think you're perfect for Gary. What a gift from the universe you are to him.
Thank you.
But B, you're a lovely person in your own right, and the fact that you don't put that forward and you let Gary shine is a wonderful thing. I'm just so glad to know you both. But let's talk about the people that know and love you best orchestrated this. Let's talk about what you later learned about how this all came about.
Okay, it's a very interesting story. The week before the conference, I mentioned that I took that week off from work, and I actually typed up my journal notes to give to the presenters. Gary was having his own set of interesting experiences. He had been having rose synchronicities. He didn't yet have a handle exactly on synchronicity, and it was a little unsettling to him.
He's now the world's expert on synchronicities, I should just remark.
I don't know if all your listeners know what synchronicity is.
Okay, go ahead. Explain it.
Well, synchronicity, for anyone who doesn't know, is a term coined by Carl Jung, and it came from an experience he had with a patient he'd been seeing and counseling. And the woman had a dream one night about a golden scarab beetle, and it was significant to her for some reason. So the next day during a therapy session with Jung, she was sharing the dream about the beetle with him, and all of a sudden, a beetle just like the one in her dream hit the window of the room they were in.
Wow.
And in that moment, he saw that the two events had a relationship and a meaning, and the term synchronicity was born. So synchronicity is seen as two or more things that happen in time, not necessarily at the same time, but in relation in time to each other and are meaningful.
Yeah.
So just in case anybody, you know, we live with synchronicity so much of the time that it's become just kind of a normal thing. But not everybody knows what it is. I can tell that when, you know, I'm talking to people and
right.
so many of them
yes.
ask.
There's a book. Gary wrote a book about synchronicities. It was just
actually
out recently,
he has
right?
a book coming out in the next month or two called Synchronicity and the One Mind.
Okay, perfect.
Yeah.
Okay, well, he's going to, I think, come and visit with us and talk about his book and about synchronicities
sure
even more. But when you know what they are and the significance of them and how they help you to live a better life and to guide you, you'll see synchronicities everywhere in your life. I should just mention
they
that.
They are beautiful, and they are so much fun.
That's true as well. That's why Gary loves them so much, I think, because he's such a playful guy. But go ahead. So he had been getting roses in his...
He'd been having rose synchronicities. Everywhere he turned, there were roses, and it was almost bothering him because he hadn't come to terms yet, and it was more than chance. It just wasn't rational for all of these roses to be showing up in his life. And his assistant, Clarissa, at the time, was aware of his rose synchronicities, and she had bought him a print of a Salvador Dali painting of a big rose in the sky floating over a landscape. And she called him, this was the week before the conference, and she said, I bought this thing for you. I have to come to your home and bring it to you. And he was like, well, okay. And he couldn't quite understand why she was so compelled to bring it to his house, because he was going to be going into the office later that afternoon. She could have just given it to him then. But she just felt moved to do that. So she came to the house and gave him this beautiful print, which she hung in his hall in his home. And then she had something else she wanted to tell him. She informed him that a woman had gotten in touch with her through a medium that Gary had tested at the university. And she told her that this woman had a dream two nights in a row that Susie Smith, very good friend of Gary's, she'd written books on over 30 books on parapsychology and survival of consciousness, and she was passed. So Susie came to her in a dream two nights in a row and said that she needed to tell Gary that something important was going to happen on the 6th. And so Clarissa told Gary this, and he was like, he's like, I don't know what you're talking about. The 6th what? The 6th day, the 6th week, the 6th month, and he promptly forgot about it.
right.
And
I'd just like to mention that actually Gary wrote a foreword to The Fun of Staying in Touch for me, and it's all about his relationship with Susie Smith, which is just beautiful all by itself. But go ahead, dear.
Yeah. And so anyway, then we meet at the conference and we have wonderful synchronicities. I eventually was able to introduce myself and told him about my experiences. My experiences actually reminded him of Susie Smith with her mother, because she had a relationship with her mother on the other side for over 40 years.
Right.
And so I gave him a copy of my journal, and we sat together a number of the afternoons for the afternoon sessions. And then after the conference, I flew back to Seattle, Gary flew back to Tucson, and when he landed in Tucson, he called his assistant, Clarissa, and just to let her know that he was back in town. And she asked him, so, did anything happen on the 6th? And he said, what are you talking about? When was the 6th?
Right.
And she said, Saturday, which was the day when all the magic had happened between he and I, all the synchronicities, all the connections. And he said, well, now that you mention it. And he asked her if she could arrange for him to have a reading with a medium who lived in Tucson that night. So he essentially went from the airport directly to the medium's house, where he had an hour and a half to 2 hour long reading with her, which is on tape, which he let me hear a month or so later. But the medium knew nothing other than Gary had requested out of this on the spur of the moment to have this reading. And, you know, this goes on for an hour and a half to 2 hours where she was getting things about how he met someone, that it may be a love interest. He was going on and on about Susie Smith, and how this other woman, presumably my mother, had planned this whole thing, that it was like a bridge club on the other side, that they were all, you know, doing this together. It was kind of a game they were putting together.
Right.
And that this had been in the works for a long time, that it was their hope that we would be together, and ultimately it was up to us. And of course, Gary's head is swimming, not knowing what to make of this.
I should add to the Bridge Club analogy, mm-hmm. Susie Smith called Gary during life her illegitimate grandson. So you
right.
can just see these ladies sitting around, theoretically doing something, playing cards, sewing, I don't know, and just mm-hmm. plotting a match. Oh,
right.
My son is perfect for your daughter, and vice versa. So that's what's in my mind whenever I hear that story.
Yeah,
isn't that
and funny, both Susie and my mom played bridge, huge bridge players.
Okay, well, then they probably were playing bridge. Wow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So anyway,
we were married 6 months later, to make a long story short.
And that's in the book, too, and that's beautiful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think that this is, to me, a universal story. I mean, I mm-hmm. know that to someone who reads this or hears Rhonda talk about it, it sounds like, wow, that's kind of magical and wouldn't happen to me.
Absolutely.
Well, it happened to me, too.
I am so glad you're making that point. I am so, so glad you're making that point, because that's really why I wrote it. I'm not writing it to share, my personal story. I'm writing it because everyone has these relationships with everyone in their circle of family and friends, whether they're on this side or the other side.
Yeah.
This is an interconnectedness on a divine, universal, spiritual level. And this just happens to be my personal story, but everyone has this connection.
And to back
Absolutely.
Up a step, we plan our lives ahead of time with our guides, mm. with the people who will be important in our lives, with their guides, and we work on our plans throughout our lives so that at some point this was a planned, whether we're conscious of it when we're here or not, we make the tweaks where our bodies sleep and our minds don't sleep, so we meet with our guides. But mm-hmm. this was something that was orchestrated. We have free will. You don't have to follow your plan. But goodness, if there are synchronicities, if there's light, if there are some signs that maybe this mm-hmm. is someone who is going to be a love interest or important in our lives, we should follow those. And we should mm-hmm. look for them. Because a big problem people have is these things are being done by our guides and by those who love us, who are not now in body. But if we ignore them, they can't help us.
Yeah.
So to learn what to look for and then to follow the direction of people who really can see better than we can is going to lead you to great happiness and fulfillment. And I think that's what your story really is. I mean, your story
Absolutely.
Is one of someone who, you seemed a little adrift to me before you met Gary. It's as if you were two halves and you became one whole. It's a beautiful, beautiful story.
Yeah, it absolutely is. And I hope other people can glean some, insights about spirituality and not only after-death communication, but how these connections are being sustained and perpetuated in our world. Synchronicity is a perfect example of that.
Yes. Okay, so you learned that you were a medium at some point, right?
I mean, I did.
According to Gary, you are a very good spiritual or psychic medium. So I believe him, even if you say modestly, because you are modest by nature, that, I'm not that good. He says you are. How did you learn that you were? How did that all happen?
Well, I do call myself a medium now. I didn't always. For the first 7 years, I communicated with my mom solely, just with her for the first 7 years of this whole experience. So I didn't call myself a medium. I was just continuing to talk to my mom. But I do now. I do call myself a medium. I connect with other spirits now, but I still don't consider myself a medium in the traditional sense, in that I don't do readings for people. We've come to call me a research medium or a selective research medium.
Okay.
After I started communicating with my mom, I didn't try to become a medium. I didn't try to have any formal training as a medium to be able to facilitate readings for other people. Actually, Spirit has taught me most of what I know. I was really just interested in continuing my relationship with my mom and seeing how good we could get it. My being able to hear her and her being able to communicate her ideas to me. When the team started showing up and they came to us, we didn't seek them out. I didn't try to connect with other
spirits. Let's back up a step, because I want to talk about the team in a little more detail. But
Love Eternal doesn't include a lot. I mean, the new chapters that we've added for the new edition do include the team because it was important. I felt it was important enough to, you know, be a part of the story. But Love Eternal is almost entirely prior to the team joining us. Just to be clear. Yeah.
But it naturally, since I'd read the earlier one and I read this one, it is a natural increase. Basically, you continue the story of your work with Gary, which is, I think, going to transform the world. So it's important that we be able to sort of see it happening. But he began then to use you more and more in his experiments, right? As the medium of choice to do this work.
Right. It made it very convenient.
We could do experiments
in the middle of the night. You know, more than, you know, Gary started developing technology, and so we had a home laboratory, we had a university laboratory, we had a private laboratory, and the one in our home, he used to communicate with spirit. It was using very sensitive equipment that we were letting the spirits train on to see what, you know, how good they could get or how they could manipulate it. And so a lot of times he'd be up in the middle of the night in his study, you know, working with them himself because they were using the equipment which he could be observing and analyzing. And more than once in the middle of the night, I was woken up by Gary saying, "Rhonda, you know, are you awake? You know, would you be willing to get up and do an experiment?"
I mean, right, I remember you telling me,
"Oh my goodness,
you could be sound asleep," but he would say,
"Absolutely,
are you awake?"
Absolutely,
enough that you weren't anymore. Isn't that funny?
You know, and you were talking about his, you know, excitement and his, you know, enthusiasm. He has that bubbly personality, and he gets very excited about things. So, you know, he would have this idea, and he couldn't even wait until morning. So there. Numerous times we'd be up in the dark in the middle of the night in the living room and he'd be saying, you know, call in the team, you know, ask them if they, you know, can come, and he'd have questions for them. He would, you know, want me to be trying to see them in different lights and different conditions. And so, you know, it was definitely something that was convenient for, for me.
Yes.
And he lives, you know, we live very much with this team of spirits. It's not just my mom and Susie, but like I said, others have come to us, I think, you know, primarily because if they're looking to make their presence known and want to make a difference in the world and want to, you know, want to change the world and want to technology to be developed to detect them and for them to use, who are they going to go to? Well, you know, Gary is a scientist, and he's an authority in the field, and who's he married to but someone who's developed a sensibility to communicate with her mother. So maybe she could hear them too. Well, as a result
I should just add here for people that there have been very earnest researchers on this side of the veil who have been working in electronic communication since the 70s at least, maybe even earlier. But those communication experiments seem to have petered out in part because the people here, who are the assistants, the real experimenters, are the dead experts, and they always work in teams. But the people here just were living their lives. They didn't, and sometimes there was actual infighting among them, and which would cause the dead to withdraw. What's different now is I know of at least two very serious researchers, actually two and a half, you and Gary, but make up one of them, who are not going away and who are not going to infight, and therefore I think for the first time in human history have a real shot at finding several different ways for the dead to directly communicate with people without a medium, and that is extraordinary. So tell us, dear, who the people are that you're working with, or they're working with you, or maybe I should say that you're working with, since they're the real experts. Who's working there?
Well, like I said, it's a team of spirits who started coming. I think I have to credit a development circle that I was in for a couple years with my opening up to the other spirits joining us. If it hadn't been for that interaction with more advanced mediums, I don't know if I would have recognized the other spirits, and I don't know if they would have come to me. But Gary had formed a development circle so that he could observe how mediums develop in their abilities. So there was a very advanced medium who was a professional full-time medium. There was a student who was just beginning as a student of the other medium, and then Gary and I, and then other people over various times. And over the course of those two and a half years that I sat in on that development circle, in time, they kept encouraging me to participate in some of their exercises. And they were very plugged into other spirits, and some of them scientists who were interested in the work, some of them that were more public figures or entertainers, that when they were here, they had personalities that were bigger than life and felt that they could change the world. And when they get to the other side, they're the same way.
Right.
So it makes sense that they would still have that mindset that, you know, I can change the world. I can make people realize that life after death is possible. I can get through to people. I can make a difference. I can change the world. I can make the, you know. And so one by one, they would come in. I don't know, honestly, if we're going to start talking about who they are.
But they're in the book, the names that are in the book?
That's true. I guess it's time to start talking about them. I'm so used to thinking that Launching Love Eternal is all about my mom. And the continued journey is going to be a little down the road. But one of the first ones to come through was Albert Einstein.
Yeah.
And he was already a part of this circle that I was a part of. And so he knew of Gary, and he knew of me because of this circle. And so the mediums were already in communication with him on a regular basis. And when I started connecting with him, it was a new experience for me. And then when a couple others started showing up as well, I thought, well, you know, it might be time. You know, these are important people with important things to offer, and they're coming to us. So I'd better honor the opportunity. So I actually started having meetings with them. And I would
tell us here who the others are, because the other names in your book, some of them are very well known. And what's curious about this is that scientists on this side of the veil, other than your wonderful husband, are ignoring this stuff. And yet once they get there, they're all over it. I mean, don't you have Baum as well?
Absolutely. David Baum.
Yeah.
David Baum.
And I've seen a picture of his lab coat from over there, taken over there. I think that's so amazing. Okay, I'm sorry. I just had to say that.
No, that's all right. I just didn't want to get hung up on who they are, because it's maybe a little hard for some people to grasp if they haven't taken the whole journey to get there. But almost every single person on the team, and the team grew to including about 30 spirits at one point, and most of the scientists on the team are really, their focus is developing the technology to give them a voice, or to develop what we call a soul phone, so that we would have
Gary
technology.
Gary coined that term, by the way.
Yeah,
history
he did.
Should record that Gary coined the term, and now everybody uses it. So
yeah.
Another coup for him. That's
from
wonderful.
The cell phone to the smartphone to the soul phone, as he said.
Yes.
And it should, you know, when it is developed, and I don't say if, I say when, because I think it's only a matter of time. When a soul phone is developed, you should be able to talk to your loved one on the other side as easily as you do your loved one here who's in another city or another country. And
wow,
you won't
look at
have,
that.
Yeah, you won't have to depend on a medium. Not that mediums aren't wonderful. They're fabulous. I so respect what they do. It's a very selfless thing that they're doing, and a skill that really takes time to develop to do it well. But imagine the day when we're going to have a cell phone and spirit on the other side will have a voice, and there won't be the doubt and the pain and the separation, because the separation will dissolve. It will disappear. You'll know, and you'll be able to talk to your loved one the day after they pass, and hear them just as clearly as the
parents
day before when they were still with you.
Parents can talk to their children. Yes, it'll be husbands and wives can, and you can ask grandma for the recipe. It's going to be.
Absolutely.
I mean, we speculate about all the changes it's going to mean. Do you and Gary talk about how the world will change once this technology is in place?
Absolutely. Absolutely we do, and it will be an unrecognizable world. It's like the internet. We couldn't have imagined how the world would be after, and now we can't imagine what it was like before.
That's right. That is such a profound statement. It's going to change every single thing about human life when it is known universally that if you miss somebody, you can just call them up and have a chat.
Yeah.
And it's going to transform science altogether, because they're going to have to take it back to the original quantum physicists and rebuild the whole lost century of the 20th century, when they were stubbornly insisting none of this could be real. It's all real. I mean, it's just they've tried to ignore it. So Absolutely. The work that you are doing is God's work. This is the most profound change in human history that we even could ever imagine, what you and Gary and the few others who are working in this field are bringing forward. I so wish we had more time. We're coming to the end of our time. Please tell people how they can reach you and get your book.
Well, the book should be available on Amazon.com. They may have to pre-order it. I don't know exactly what the release date is set for right now, but the new edition will be available soon. They can also find out more about me and our work on RhondaEklundSchwartz.com.
Spell it, please, dear.
It's Rhonda with an H, so it's RhondaEklund, Schwartz, Schwartz. If you find it on Amazon first, you can probably get the spelling, or maybe you'll have it available.
I'm going to include the website in the description of this podcast.
Oh, perfect.
People will be able to find her from there. But I urge you to read the book. I can't tell you how beautifully it's written, how wonderful the love story is, and how fascinating the science is. It's just a great package.
Thank you, Roberta, for inviting
me. Is there any last word you'd want to give people? I should just mention, you told me this was your first interview. I have to say, you do a very good job for someone who's never done this before.
Well, thank you. Any kind of public speaking is not something that I would seek out to do. It's not my nature. It's not my talent. But I have a message to share and a story to share that supersedes all that. And so I just have to do my best and hope it's enough.
That's been wonderful. Thank you so much, dear. I'm so sorry that we have to end this, but we'll talk again soon about all of this.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you so much for inviting me to be on.
Oh, well,
Gary, look forward
to
talking to you soon.
Yes. I look forward to it as well. I think part of the fun of doing this work is the wonderful people we meet, and you certainly are part of that. This has been Seek Reality with Roberta Grimes. You are a powerful, eternal being, and you never began, and you never will end. When you fully understand everything that means, it's going to change your life forever and for the better. Our guest next week is my dear friend, and in my view, the most gifted spiritual medium alive, Suzanne Wilson. She's the medium who, by the way, also Gary has tested, I know that you and she have worked in tandem.
We're working very closely with Suzanne these days.
Suzanne is the medium who made liberating Jesus even possible, and she now is empowering, frankly, the whole rest of my life. I couldn't work without her. Joining her is going to be Elizabeth Boisson. She is the co-founder of Helping Parents Heal, because next week, we're going to be talking about children and death. This is a topic that is at once terrible and also in some ways beyond belief beautiful. Don't miss it. This week we've been talking with Rhonda Schwartz. She is the wife and the work partner, what a great combination that is, of the incomparable Dr. Gary Schwartz of the University of Arizona at Tucson. This broad new science, the biggest science in all of human history, that we now call just afterlife studies, is going to dominate the second half of this century. And when its history is written, Gary and Rhonda Schwartz will be seen to be among this field's biggest stars. Dear friends, each of us is on an individual spiritual journey. No journey is like anybody else's, and we can't know how the process ever feels to others, which is a big reason why we never must presume to judge anybody. But the course in spiritual growth that each life represents isn't optional, and there are no shortcuts. The only grade given is an epic pass if you handle this life's lessons well, or it's a sigh that you'll give after you leave this lifetime and a resolve to do better with your lessons the next time around, but it isn't optional, so why don't we all try to ace it? And a book like Love Eternal is food and drink for someone whose life lessons resonate at all with Rhonda's, and many, many of us have life lessons like that. However you do it, though, since you're in the middle right now of a compulsory spiritual course, please resolve today to do whatever you can to get an A in everything on your spiritual journey in this whole beautiful lifetime. But for now, please enjoy and make the most of this coming week in our one reality, knowing that you are a powerful, eternal being and you are infinitely loved.
You've been listening to Seek Reality with Roberta Grimes. Roberta blogs and answers questions at robertagrimes.com. Join us every week as we explore what the afterlife evidence and modern science combine to tell us is true about the one reality we all share. Knowing the truth changes everything.